Black WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. All of our Wise conversations brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. Reminder, next Sunday, crab cakes at Wise Store 206. That's Fullerton. It's not really Fullerton. I don't think it's Fullerton. I keep telling them it's the Perry Hall side, but they swear to me it's Fullerton. Bel Air Road, just outside the Beltway. You know where the Wise Markets is. You give a gas up there if you get an opportunity. Luke Jones joins us now to talk about all things. Luke, you know, I put these Purple Friday things together. I'm going to be at the Chaucer, you know, from 2 until 5. Next Friday, we're going to be at Costas from 2 and 5 with Johnny O. Crab cakes, beer, maybe some vodka. And it's a lot more fun when you think your football team's good. And, you know, every time you and I get together, the football team, at least in perception, if not in reality, because I think when you lose Marcus Peters, it becomes a reality. All the gambling people are like, I can't believe I bet on this. And I'm like, yeah, I can't believe you bet on this either. But people that go in all early on any of this stuff, the season hasn't begun. And I hate to be Chicken Little and like all of that. And I'm glad I'm not taking the phone calls of people jumping off the purple ship today. But, you know, this has been the worst month ever in regard to where the expectation began and where it is when you haven't kicked the football. And I still think they're going to win on Monday night.
Yeah, I think they're going to win Monday night as well. And that might say more about my expectations for the Las Vegas Raiders than the Baltimore Ravens at this point. But
I keep calling them Oakland.
Right. Well, I called them L.A. last week, and that's even worse. So, but
so did Amy Trask.
I'd say this. If this had happened over the
repeat that for me. You broke up on me. Repeat that again.
The season is not over by any stretch of the imagination.
It hadn't started.
And even a team with, well, that's part of the issue here. What I was just going to say is if you have this period of injuries, and let's talk about it, over the last 3 weeks, you know, and this ended up happening in less than 3 weeks, you lose LJ Fort, an important depth guy at your inside linebacker position that has a lot of young talent, but it's unproven. You lose J.K. Dobbins, who was going to be your starting running back, a guy I thought had legitimate potential this year. You lose Justice Hill, which, okay, number three running back, even if Tyson Williams is going to beat him out, still a special teams guy, a guy that maybe profiled to do a little bit of the J.K. Dobbins perimeter stuff. But then, the whammy on Thursday, within moments of one another, losing Marcus Peters and then Gus Edwards. It was a shells and shorts practice. It wasn't like it was a full-blown scrimmage or anything like that. And I think it's always, you know, we always think about where injuries occur. And we talked about this after the Dobbins injury. But I think in live game settings, whether it's a preseason game like Dobbins or whether it's just the attrition that is the regular season, and now 17 games rather than 16, there's always a sense when it happens in a game that, you know, the bullets are flying. It's live, right? I always think when you have injuries in a practice setting, and this is not a knock on John Harbaugh or the organization or that there's anything going on that's not, you know, not up to par. I mean, if you look at the team over the last few years, you know, they've been on the healthier side for the most part over the last few years, especially on the offensive side of the ball 2 years ago. But your practice field is your sanctuary, right? I mean, it's a controlled setting. And look, injuries occur over training camp. But when you get into the regular season mode, those injuries that occur in practice, they happen, but usually not of this magnitude, usually not in this short a period of time. And the point I'm making is not to be critical of anyone. I mean, again, you can't just put these guys on ice and show up in Las Vegas and expect to win. But I think there is a mental toll that's taken here that I do wonder about a little bit going into Monday night. We know the Ravens, they're going to say all the right things. They're going to talk about next man up. They're going to compete. They're going to battle. They're going to win games. They're still going to be really good. I don't know if I'd pick them to win the Super Bowl at this point. I wasn't picking them to win the Super Bowl anyway, but do I knock them down a peg in the hierarchy of the AFC? You could certainly argue that at this point without being considered a Debbie Downer. I don't think their season's over, but when you just have this much happen in this short a period of time before the season has even started. And then it's like, oh yeah, now it's time to kick it off for real. And your quarterback's going to be tackled and everyone's going full live and there's no thud and there's no red non-contact jerseys. I think it is tough to fight off the sense of feeling like you're snake bitten. We saw this with the San Francisco 49ers last year. I mean, defending NFC champions, high expectations, and their season was done within the first few weeks when you saw some of the names that they lost. So that's not to say the Ravens are done by any means. I still very much see a narrative of how this team wins the Super Bowl this year. However, each of these injuries in succession and understanding you have a finite number of resources in terms of replacing these guys with the salary cap. And yeah, you know, they bring in Devontae Freeman. They're working to bring in Latavius Murray. Le'Veon Bell's in camp.
These are proven NFL guys, to the degree that they could come in and do the job. One of them, two of them, three of them with Lamar Jackson, they've never played in an offense like that. Maybe Bell a little bit, but not this kind of offense.
Sure. But the thing I would say, to not be dismissive of the losses, because fans will do that. It's a coping mechanism and every team does it. I saw a lot of people do this after the J.K. Dobbins injury, and certainly I saw people talking about it after Gus Edwards. And while I do subscribe to the idea that as long as Lamar Jackson is under center or taking those pistol snaps, they'll figure out their running game and their running game will still be good to really good. That's just the way it is, because he is such a generational talent in that regard. However, and it's funny because the football analytics guys, they've long, at least, I don't want to say long, but at least a moderate amount of time now, you've heard the expression running backs don't matter, because they talk about the offensive line, they talk about the scheme. In the case of the Ravens, it's their quarterback that puts stress on everyone. You take a false step, you hesitate, you jump the gun a little early, you're out of position, you have poor fits with your gap assignments, and boom. The Ravens are running for 3,000 yards over the course of the season as they had the last couple years. But let's look back at this. The Ravens invested a second round pick in J.K. Dobbins. If running backs didn't matter, you wouldn't do that, right? You'd use that second round pick on somebody else. Gus Edwards just got a 2-year, $10 million extension in June. If running backs didn't matter and it was just plug and play, then you wouldn't worry about doing that, right?
Well, they gave Mark Ingram some money too, before all of this. Yeah.
So my point is, I do think they'll figure it out. And as choppy as it might be on Monday night, other than Tyson Williams, who's the only guy who's been here beyond the last week, and even he's never taken an NFL snap. Let's keep that in mind. As much as we're talking about him as being the established guy here, you do make the good point in they are bringing in some established guys. However, these are guys in their late 20s or early 30s. Is the ceiling there that you're going to have with a healthy J.K. Dobbins or even Gus Edwards at this point? I'd say no. And I think that there's a reason these guys were available, and that's part of it. And you can talk about Murray. That was more of a cap-related maneuver for the Saints letting him go. But it is challenging in that regard. And with each of these moves, for me, it doesn't mean your championship hopes are over by any stretch of the imagination, but I feel it does chip away at your ceiling as a football team. And as much as we've talked about the running backs, because it's been this extraordinary sequence of bad events for them, I still look at Marcus Peters on the other side here and how problematic that is, just because of Marcus Peters and Marlon Humphrey have been the foundation of everything they do defensively. When they play so well in man coverage, elite man coverage, it's allowed Wink Martindale to just go nuts with his front seven, with blitzes and deception and those amoeba fronts where there's seven or eight guys at the line.
And really athletic guys as well. They've drafted for that.
Right. But my point is, he's allowed to do that when you have two corners, two studs in the secondary that you can just man up and you don't have to worry about giving them help. And that's not to say they never have help, but you can just play so much man coverage, so much single high, so much cover zero, even compared to what other teams do. And now Anthony Averett being the expected replacement for Marcus Peters. And look, Anthony Averett's a talented kid. He's someone that I've liked. I know Wink Martindale really likes him, even said he has all pro talent last month. But it's easier to say that about a guy when he's your number three or your number four corner than when you're actually putting him out there. And Marcus Peters isn't coming back until 2022. So I just look at that. And again, talk about chipping away at your potential ceiling, chipping away at your upside. And it really just makes things that much more difficult for you. So, you know, but you mentioned, you know, this training camp and how difficult it's been. Not the only one that I think it's comparable to is 2001. You know, they bring in Leon Searcy to be their right tackle. He goes down, never plays a snap for the team. And of course, Jamal Lewis. Now, the difference here is Lamar Jackson's their Jamal Lewis as it relates to their running game. I mean, he's been their leading rusher the last couple years, but that's the only summer. Now, 2015, they got into it and they had all the injuries, of course. And by the end of the year, it felt like a preseason, you know, preseason by the end of the year with the number of injuries they had. But what they've gone through here over the last couple weeks, the only thing that at all feels reminiscent is 2001 with Jamal, because they had lost Priest Holmes. We know they didn't have depth. They're bringing in Terry Allen. You know, that right now the Ravens are bringing in Terry Allen type guys right now. So again, I think they will figure out the running game. It may not look the prettiest in week one, week two, week three, but I think they'll figure that out. Whether it's Tyson Williams being the next Gus Edwards, or whether it's Latavius Murray or whoever figuring that out. But again, I do look on the defensive side, and I mean, Marcus Peters has just been such a big part of their defensive DNA these last couple of years. I mean, his swagger, his attitude, his play, his ball hawk ability, you know, taking the football away. I mean, those turnovers, we talk about it all the time. Those are such gigantic swing plays in terms of win probability.
All week long, I was predicting that would be how they win Monday night. Yeah. I mean, with the sky falling on the offense and who's going to run the ball. And, you know, this is before they lose Gus Edwards. This is just like last week's two ACL, you know. Yeah. And I said their ability to take the ball away and the way they've played the, you know, over the three meaningless preseason games, but sort of the fluidity of it and how Wink's got the thing going. It's because, much like Marvin back in 01 to ring a 20-year bell. And they'll be doing that for the Cincinnati game, by the way, when the reunion happens this year. Hopefully we can all get to the stadium and make that happen. You know, when you had Chris McAllister, Dwayne Starks, Rod Woodson running everybody, it's a different game. It was much like when we lost Ed Reed, all of that sort of quarterbackness of the backside. That's why they gave Humphrey the money. And to your point, and I'll let you speak about this a little bit more, because I don't know that anybody's going to go back and investigate the Marcus Peters, you know, 6-minute press conference an hour before his season was over. But I have only been around Marcus Peters a dozen times back after he came onto the team. He was a guy that wanted no part of me or anybody like me. Although he got along with Mike Silver, but that's another story altogether. He gave an impassioned speech, and you and I talk at length for real. And this happens when I run into Trevor Price at networking events around town, or I run into Jameel McClain, who's made a life here, that there's something about here that when people come here, they speak well of it, but it's not phony. It's real. When there's something about the way the Ravens run their organization and winning and all of the trails of all of that, that can make a vagabond heart like Marcus Peters come in. And dude, I spend a little bit of time around Ozzie over the course of time, like see him in a press box. You know my relationship with Ozzie. And I remember Ozzie like being over the moon effusive privately with Eric and just sort of in the press box yapping in Cleveland 2 weeks after the Peters trade, or whenever that trade happened two years ago. I remember being around it and thinking, man, I don't hear Ozzie talk about guys. He was talking to some Cleveland. He was talking to like Terry Pluto. And so, you know, like talking to some Cleveland guys, and like was just not just blowing smoke, like, hey man, like I wouldn't want to have to go out there and catch balls against Marcus Peters. I like that kind of player. And that's an Ozzie kind of player. So as much as Eric would be into it, I just heard Ozzie go over the moon about it. Talk about Peters a little bit on Thursday, because I don't know everybody's going to go back. And I don't know what fans know or think about these guys or their personalities or why they wind up on their third or fourth team quickly.
Well, and that's what's so interesting about Marcus Peters. I mean, this is a guy who from his first year in Kansas City took the football away. You know, I mean, he's led the NFL in interceptions since 2015. And he's been traded twice.
And nobody wanted him in their locker room. You know what I mean? Well, like,
yes and no. I think from what I understand, L.A. wasn't as bad in that regard as Kansas City kind of felt towards the end. I think he got along pretty well with guys. I think there was more of a philosophical difference. They played a lot of zone. Marcus Peters is a man coverage guy. I mean, we've seen it, or a guy who wants to freelance a little bit, or he'll be in zone coverage, but he'll bait a quarterback into making
Ed Reed.
Right,
and that
right.
Swagger comes with that, right? And Andy Reed can only handle so much of that, really, literally, right?
And look, that's some coaches are like that. Some coaches,
dude, Wink's got a Raider heart. You know, Wink Martindale, he has a you know, a Rex Ryan, Buddy Ryan spirit. He's a maverick, a way that other defensive coordinators wouldn't play it that way.
No question about it. I mean, Dean Pease compared to him. I mean, you know, and that's what I thought was when Marcus Peters came in, we were coming up. Think about this. This was only a couple years removed from 4th and 12, Andy Dalton to Tyler Boyd. And look, they had a really good 2018 defensive season. I'm not going to say the defense stunk or anything like that, but we did talk about going from the Ray Lewis, Ed Reed era, the end of that, to the 5-6 years after that with, you know, CJ Mosley and Eric Weddle and, you know, look, Pro Bowl caliber players and good defenses. But what did we talk about? The lack of alpha males on that defensive side of the ball that the Ravens were just, I mean, had always been known for having those big personalities, those guys with their chip on their shoulder. Those guys are going to talk some trash. Marcus Peters was an old school or is an old school Raven in that regard. And you can actually go to my article at BaltimorePositive.com that breaks down the injuries, gives my early thoughts. I'll have more over the course of the weekend and as we get closer to kickoff on Monday night. But I actually embedded the audio from Marcus Peters talking about this. And you can just click on it as you're reading the article. And as I said, it was just a couple hours before he got hurt. But you really got the sense that he felt, you know, somewhat jaded, you know, after being traded twice and a guy who'd been to a couple Pro Bowls already and comes to Baltimore and he's not really sure what to expect. And he said he just got a really good vibe from day one. You know, young player, good combination of veterans and young players who wanted to win a Super Bowl, wanted to be great, and he just...
Well, they had a Hall of Fame general manager that was really happy to have him. I know that for sure.
Yeah. So that's where... And look, they still have... They have a lot of talent. They're still deep at corner from a standpoint of, I think their defense can still be excellent. But when you take a Marcus Peters out of the equation, here's a perfect example. How did the Ravens attack covering Darren Waller on Monday night? One theory I had, because Jimmy Smith's just back at practice this week, I don't know if he's going to be ready to go. And if he is he anything close to normal Jimmy Smith when healthy? Because he would be a guy that historically you would say, okay, 6'2", match him up against the team's tight end that they line up in the slot and do all these things with. My thought prior to the Peters injury was maybe not over the course of the entire game, but in certain sub packages, maybe you move Marlon Humphrey back into the slot where Waller's going to line up often, and you match him up a little bit bigger, more physical. We know Marlon makes great plays on the ball and has that ability to strip the ball. However, now with Peters out of the equation, I feel you probably are going to need to keep Humphrey on the outside more. I don't know if you can just put Anthony Averett and Chris Westry at your outside corner spots and think you're going to be okay in that regard. So I think it hurts you from a versatility standpoint. As I mentioned, I think not Wink will still be aggressive. Let's be very clear about that. But are there certain instances where he might have to think twice when he really wants to be risky, knowing that he doesn't have Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters out there on islands that you can trust, you know, wholeheartedly. So, you know, again, chipping away at that ceiling, chipping away at that, you know, that potential that they have as far as how great they can potentially be. Again, I'm not at all writing this team off by any means. You know, I still am picking them to win the division, but each of these injuries before you even start, and then it's like, okay, now you have a 17 game schedule, and you know, it's pretty rare you're going to get through that without losing some more guys in the process. I think there is that mental hurdle right now that John Harbaugh is really going to have to monitor with these guys. And the veterans are really going to have to monitor with the young guys to not start feeling sorry for yourself and start thinking, wow, is this just not our year? I think it's even the most tested, even the most battle-tested, hardened teams, I think it's tough not to feel that way when you've had this run of injuries in just a couple of weeks, when you haven't even started the season yet. So I think that's something that, hey, you have a head coach in his 14th season. You certainly like having that rather than a guy who's only in his second season and hasn't won anything. So the Ravens are built to sustain this. However, that doesn't mean that that's going to end with them raising the trophy at the end of the year. And when you lose talented players like this, it impacts your ability to fulfill that. So that's where it's tough. That's where it's frustrating. But they have to turn the page quickly because we've talked about it. This opening month of the season, the opponents aren't juggernauts other than Kansas City. But three of those are on the, those three opponents are on the road. So you better be ready to play, and you can't be feeling sorry for yourself. This league's too competitive. Even from the best to the worst team, that margin is not that different. That if you don't have your head on straight, you're going to get beat.
On the road in Las Vegas, I'll be there on Monday night. Luke will be standing by, heading to Owings Mills for a short week against the Chiefs. You can find all of our work out at WNST and in our podcast audio vault at BaltimorePositive.com. Dennis will be around on Sunday, and of course, you can follow his work Thursday afternoon from 3 until 5, and on Sunday mornings at Coons Ford, and the WNST Tech Service brought to you by Coons Ford Security Boulevard will be there for you as well. The Crab Cake Tour underway, part of Purple Friday. All presented by the Maryland Lottery. We start at the Chaucer in Highland Town, at Foster in Highland with my pal Brian Eater. We're going to have some friends from Enoch Pratt stop by and the Patterson Creative Arts. We're going to talk about Highland Town. Next week, we're going to be at Costa, still talking about Highland Town from what I understand. And Johnny O is going to be coming over next week at Costa as we celebrate 50 years there. I think it might be 50 crab cakes for me by that point next week. But the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, we're putting together with Brandon Scott as well. We'll be over at Coco's doing that with him later on in the month. So we'll have more details. But I'm at Wise Markets too. I want to talk about Wise Conversations. We're going to be at Fullerton, that store 206, according to Rob Santoni. I'm going to be having the signature crab cake. And I think my wife and I might be mixing up some crab cake recipes as well that day, trying to play around with all the things we learned on the road as we traveled to 23 counties and Baltimore City. Luke and I will be debating injuries and more throughout the weekend on social media. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on LinkedIn, we're on Snapchat, we're on Instagram, and sometimes even live on the YouTube thing. I am Nestor, he is Luke, we are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.